really appreciate this because it sounds so mundane. There may be a huge difference between the United States' success with Apollo and the Soviets' failure. Was the management system instituted for the launch vehicle, I mean the propulsion. Yeah. Apparently the Soviets could have done it if they had ever mastered a large booster, I mean launch vehicle, with sufficient power. They couldn't quite get it, whether it was, what, Proton or Energia or whatever. But it was the management system that was the difference.
Well, like I think it was William Morosky talking about Nova. You know, one time that was going to be a follow-up to the Saturn Apollo, Nova vehicle, and the question was, can you ship it horizontal and have to stand it vertical, take all these loads and so forth? And William's thinking, well, you know, that's not going to be in trouble. We'll ship it. We'll design it so it'll stay horizontal. You don't have to worry about that. You know, and that gets back in right off the bat. He and others are thinking about how you transport this and try to make it integrated. And I think we had I think the program was superly integrated. And it cost a lot of money, but in today's environment, you wouldn't be able to afford it. But it cost a lot of money. But it was
thought about every aspect,
just about everything you can think of. And we paid a price for that. In my heart, we had failure on the circulating pump on the Skylab, and the date was set and all these kind of things, and authorized a $10 million backup, which is a normal reaction, except the backup's going to come months and months after the flight was scheduled.
And that made sense,
I think, at the time, and probably still does, but I thought, boy, you know, that's you don't want to be a lone pole in a tent like that. We've got to solve the problem you're working on, not come with a backup here. And we went with the one we went with. I still think Apollo, in the main, if you did a critical analysis of the techniques and our coordination, which are the techniques and all that, and the control of the hardware, the flight hardware and interfaces, would stand a good study. And I'm sure none of it had been made, but it stand the test of time. It was well done. And I know that, for example, I went to University of Oklahoma, and it had a long story there, but I went out there to talk to a group of people that they were at the graduate level taking some courses, and most of them Army or government employees and various things, managing different kind of projects. And I got up and I told them the grand scheme. Well, here's the grand scheme, you know, how you do it. And this one lady, she said, that, you know, how do I apply that to this piece of hardware on my bench? And I didn't answer as well as I should have, and probably could have been couldn't have done much better at the time. But you can take the hardware on the bench and apply the same general approach. You don't do all the paperwork and stuff like that, but again, thought process to it. I've seen so many things started. Small thing started. There was no management at all applied to the guy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The result is this got all screwed up. And you need to have some kind of control and checks and balances and testing and know that you touched all bases where you're ready to go.
Sure.
Too many things have been put on the flight or whatever that weren't not ready to go out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the tough automobile's one of them.
Exactly.
Probably just send some better scrutiny at the beginning.
A little more marketing
research.
I think
probably applied to the SM-1 Tucker. Tucker never got off the ground.
Right.
An interesting book about Tucker, too, that automobile.
Now, was that the one that was manufactured at Redstone?
Or was there was another one that they made nine copies of.
Well, they didn't make more than one of that.
I don't think made here. But the Tucker's one, they had the big show scheduled for it, and it couldn't just run to go from the plant to the show.
it wouldn't let you touch anything because the door might come off.
I mean, his thing was a pretty big scam, except the concept of his building it. what he put into it, and his
distribution concept was great.
He's way ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Had headlights that turn with the wheel.
That's a good idea. Had lots of things like that. Innovative
things. Sure.
I'm disappointed it didn't come to fruition.
Is that Venice? That painting?
It sure is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of them.
We bought those in Venice from a.
Wish we'd bought a dozen of them, different kind. We bought those from probably on the street.
Right
on the side of the street.
We bought one. We were there 2 years ago now, and my wife paints, and we bought one from a street artist too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite as big. Anyway, nice scene.
I like it.
It reminds me of Venice.
It really does.
It really captures it well.
Yeah, Marty thought the canals were
a little dirtier than they should have been. And
canals are dirty.
They were then.
We were lucky there was no odor or anything.
I wouldn't have wanted to swim.
Yeah, that was
swim in the water.
The odor wasn't there, but just it looked bad. And,
right.
But that's, we were there 10 years ago.
I mean, a little bit longer, 10, 12.
Yeah, we stayed there.
First trip we stayed two
months in Marcatura, Carlo Giannini, and in Heidelberg. And
we went to the Heidelberg Orthopedic Clinic, which is a fine orthopedic clinic. But they were so austere. While I'm sitting there waiting around, I expected to see a patient come down the hall with a bedpan. I mean, that's how austere
no
luxuries there.
It was bare bones, and they put a cast on Margaret from the hip all the way down to the ankle, and swelling set in the middle of the night. And she liked it. Boy, she was painful that night.
Got mm-hmm.
Next morning, the doctor spoke English. We got out there, took a cab out to the clinic again, got in, saw him, and he was upset that we didn't call. I said, we don't speak any language here. But then we went in and got treated, and they recast that thing, did us a good job. And we checked out, and we played the MasterCard. Either that or personal check. $60. We had x-rays, three doctor visits, and two nurse encounters. Cost us $60. I told the doctor about that when we were in Amsterdam, getting ready to fly. I still had a leg in the cast. I told the guy in St. Louis. I rode into Amsterdam with him, left Mark the motel.
Right. Out there.
Yes.
Well, Ron Brown, he would go home that way a lot.
And he had a
person assigned to him to drive him
home and things like that, which is fine.
And he would carry work in the car. He'd work in the car.
But that didn't keep him looking out the windows. He was and noticing things. And he kept noticing this cesspool out there. They call the pond, whatever they call it.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrible. It's dirty. You remember how dirty that thing was?
Oh, yes.
We had this same group of people
mentioned
last time that the advisory committee, they came out one day and
he addressed that issue.
He said, if we're going to have a university,
clean that pond up.
And if we're not going to have a university, still clean that pond. You take a look at it now, it looks pretty good.
They got on top of it, and they cleaned that thing up, and I guess the people who do the cleaning never recognize where that came from, but
anybody could have done that, but the person who continually does that kind of thing, you say, this guy's a little different than most people,
That's right.
And he also talked about the, and nothing to be done about this, of course, the gaudy appearance, I guess, of Governor's Drive, down through there,
all those strip joints,
and where they came from,
Honest Lewison just turned over.
His grave when I was saying that how we let our culture we just dissolve into nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And all the things being torn down and not policing things, having people clean, over there in Germany you saw them yourself in
sure.
Even in Venice with the canals, I mean things are maintained.
The old things are zagged.
Yes. They should have been. And you'll get my wife Margaret upset to talk to her about the courthouse.
Yeah,
a magnificent building now, and we could put that building anywhere, at the airfield or whatever, the way they have now. And
mm-hmm.
We lost that big monument, and that's the way it goes.
Right. kept saying, well, it's the site that's historic. It's the site.
Yeah.
And then they put that monstrosity
in.
Blaspheme the site.
They did. Well, I think here we, it was a quite an interesting meeting. This was still back at 4488. And Marshall was directed to set up, it turned out to be an industrial operations, to manage the big contracts. And before that time, everything had been done under Von Braun in the R&D area. His R&D labs took care of everything. They managed everything, had some sort of project structure. And Dana did quite well through all the programs. So this was a direction from Washington. And Von Braun had talked to a few key people about it. It was obvious as the needs unfold. And I'm not sure what time we're talking about here, but the Pope had died.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, you'll recall this, they were cloistered over there for quite a long time, waiting for the white smoke to come out.
Right.
You missed that.
Yes.
So
we had the big room at 4488, the large conference room, full of all the lab directors and things like that, and it was all around the table.
And had the organizational chart proposed, which really wasn't proposed, but that's what it was.
Organization chart on hardboard
that folded up, you know, so you'd be secretly set up here like that. And like you were going by sitting here, was sitting right here.
That time Jerry McCall was
involved in that.
And I thought this was dramatic, the highest form, and I'm sure it was planned.
Sure it was. That Von Braun was at the right time in this discussion,
because nobody really liked this idea of Von Braun stepping out of direct control of that. Didn't like that.
No, no.
And so Von Braun...
Direct control of the...
R&D contract. The R&D staff.
These are all the lab guys. They could care less about the programs.
Right.
Who ran those. But they didn't want anybody between them and Von Braun. It gets back to they weren't thinking of the money notes, but gets back to that thing that the money notes had to go through somebody.
Sure.
And they knew other things were involved. So he had these things up like that.
Von Braun didn't.
And he wasn't getting anywhere. They weren't agreeing. So he took it. Take his
piano
or porn or something like that. Knock them over. Like, you know, if you don't. Essentially saying, we don't do this, that's what happened. Jim, stand them back up. They talk more.
Knock them over. It was the most dramatic thing in a simple way. Jerry was making the presentation.
No, Von Braun was, but Jerry was sitting by him, and he was a stooge guy that pushed the thing over, see?
It set it back up.
You know, it was a foregone conclusion only happened.
And Von Braun kept knocking over,
because the objection was trying to indicate visually, that, hey, we don't do that, we're just dead in the water. And Jerry set it back up, bam, and go down again.
I don't know how many times.
It wasn't overly done, but it's just another
thing. And we got through all the discussion.
Not all the discussion, and the voting process, which has some very strong disadvantages and also some very strong advantages. Bob, what do you think about this?
Carl, what do you think about it?
Right on down the line. Oh, and got into one guy I won't identify. He got down to him, and he says,
this is the first I've heard of this, and I don't know enough about the comic.
I felt so sorry for this guy. These other guys had been a little bit clued in on it.
Sure.
And here's a lab director
of
a certain capability, maybe more as a person than it did. He's a very quiet, recluse almost, didn't say much, didn't ever make any noise.
And they left him out of the picture. And he was hurt.
You could tell he was hurt.
And the girl went around there, and then he kept talking. Now the question is, who's going to run R&D?
Now they're going to do this. Who's going to run this?
Carl
and people say, so-and-so, no.
And so they came around and Herman was sitting there. And somebody mentioned Herman's name.
And he didn't like that. It's kind of like when I mentioned Charlie, that Bill Easton may get in touch with him. He didn't want that stuff.
Right.
He said, Herman, I didn't want this. And he finally got up because it was getting more and more focused on him. He got up and he started walking around the room. And he said the sense of this, I can't remember the exact words, Bob, but it was
sense of this.
He says, you accept me
because I'm the less of the evils.
Wasn't it?
You want me?
Oh, that's right. And he
was not a lab record at times.
I think it may have a lot to do with it.
I don't know whether it was preset. I don't think it was. I don't think Herman knew he was going to get that when he went in there.
He was here today. He had been along the field. He should have been an actor, but he was really under great stress then.
I'm sure he didn't want to appear that he was pleased with it, just for obvious reasons.
And second, I'm not sure he was pleased with it. I think he
was obviously in his objection to it. But here again, being a good soldier,
It's okay.
And he brought a lot of headaches doing that.
Sure.
About that.
So he was going to stand really between all the lab chiefs and everything and Von Braun.
They didn't like that.
And
they didn't like that. But then the thing about it,
this is the time that Von Braun had already planned out.
And
when he gets his plan, nothing deviates from that. He and
Maria Vaughn
agrees on his cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to leave on a certain day and come back on a certain day. And he said, and then that's where the Pope comes in. He said, I won't come back until you'll see the white smoke.
what an analogy there, right? Until you really come down and get to what this thing, I'm not coming back. And
he also said in there that, I can run
R&D.
And we'll get somebody to run the whole thing. They'll send somebody else
to run.
Mm-hmm. I'll take the labs. Somebody else take the probe and send them another man.
You want that?
Nobody wanted that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the pressure point he put on them, and they agreed to it.
That was an exciting meeting. It went on and on.
It was a very impressive meeting. The way he did, and it was a party to
dramatics and presentation, and
the decision had already been made. It had to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he made people feel like they had a part in it.
And they did have a part.
In the thing, because he had the option of
turning it down and taking the other. He'd have done that.
Way in the back there, he'd have done that.
I no doubt in my mind we'd have another director of Marshall Space Flight
Center. I think he was that kind of person.
And he would become more the R&D or technical director.
And he'd have been a greater than that, but
then he would have been under someone like Medeiros. I'm not any Medeiros, but that's
sure.
That gets back.
He hadn't done it. Don't put him in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was fortunate that headquarters drove us to that, and it's fortunate the lab directors accepted it
and went along with it, and it worked well.
Mm-hmm.
It worked really well.
Right.
And they had their own staff meeting and all, and
Hammer and Tongs. I went to love those Hammer and Tongs, and they.
So this involves a bunch of guys in there, you know.
Oh, of course.
They just blow up,
What about what year would this have been?
Well, we're still in 4488, and I can't recall when we moved to the headquarters building.
4200.
One thing I didn't do, Bob, I didn't keep a lot of notes.
Unfortunately, I didn't make them.
I don't have a calendar. Everybody keeps calendars, and I had calendars too, but mine's not there. But I'll try to think of that, and
ask somebody else when
IO was established. PAO could tell
right.
when established IO, I'm sure of that.
Right, sure.
I can check on that. Have you talked to Bonnie Holmes?
I have a request
to Bonnie, yeah.
She should remember that real well, too.
But I think PAO could help you on that date.
Okay. From a historical standpoint.
That was called industrial operations.
Yeah, called industrial operations and R&D labs and directed by headquarters, and that was it.
But we really didn't have people we thought competent, and really they were. We didn't have anybody to manage that thing with any credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Ed O'Connor had the credibility, but he wasn't the best manager.
but
the figurehead, it was acceptable.
And,
sure.
They did this. They ran their programs and Rudolph and so forth. It didn't bother them because he didn't bother them. He just made them
mm-hmm.
the way they want. And they went, Ron Brown made the decision for them anyway. And this is not derogatory, but Rudolph, from the center standpoint, was one accepted in Washington. He spoke to the program.
He was the one who was
he was the one that was respected in Washington.
Oh, I see.
For the program,
right.
The program side.
Ron Brown, of course, was
overall, but I mean, you all know about the program at the high level.
Right.
Remember, he's the one that said, "Werner who?"
Oh,
yes. So I thought that was that formation of that thing was a interesting event, and
it had far-reaching implications.
Had he not sold it, that program?
Right. Oh, to back up.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, that was the countdown demonstration test,
yeah,
was
uh-huh.
it? And Rudolph was at the Cape.
At the Cape, yeah.
And then Werner was in
Osk up here,
When he called him.
I thought that was great, you know. And
the strange thing, when Rudolph retired,
nobody thought about that. And I said, hey, you know, we got
to bring this thing in.
Somebody told me there is a tape.
There is.
Of that conversation.
There is a tape.
And I asked Ed Bugby if he knew anything about it, because I said, I think it was played at Rudolph's retirement.
What? Yeah.
And he said, no, he...
There is one.
I mean,
yeah. There is one.
What didn't know about that.
Yeah. Well, not many people did, you know.
It was hilarious. I mean, everybody just...
On the whole network heard it, though. I mean, everybody just laughing all over.
Right.
Number one, had a successful test. Everybody's elated about that.
And not a poop bar as Rudolph called.
He's way up in the clouds anyway. He got through the test.
Right.
Made the key to that thing, because the laboratories, the project manager in the laboratory, whatever structure you had, didn't have the time as another project manager. The same guy over here in a different organization.
Mm-hmm.
He'd wreck you, he'd cut your money off. You know, if he controlled the money.
He didn't control it all. I mean, Von
Braun had to handle it too, but the guy who controls the money, he runs the show.
Right.
And that's where the project management came in. And I think that's another reason for having it. It was a good decision. Yeah, it was a good thing they forced it. But we would not have succeeded. I don't think we would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the contract's all over, you know. It got very complex. As you already shown, you know, the management of that and how they put it together, it was a very complex thing. I don't think we could have done it.
Well,
we could have done it, but I don't think we... I don't know we'd have done it on time. I know that George Miller, for example, said on Frank Borman's side, that's like, that's it. We're going, I mean, you know, and we was out of town.
Uh-huh.
He didn't check any further. But we'd have been sitting around. See, we didn't, the all-up concept was George Miller's concept. We were stage to stage, and we'd go one at a time. We'd still been shooting things down in the cage, you know. Because
right.
Everybody wanted to work right, you know, work right, right. And he said, George said, we launched, that's it. You better be ready.
Uh-huh.
And he was right. And we weren't, Marshall wasn't used to that. And that was a good discipline he put in.
Mm-hmm.
We might still be on the Cape of countdown demonstration test. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't think so, but I think his boldness of doing that was...
Well, the Germans were very conservative.
Very conservative, yeah.
Test.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to be. And kind of retrospect, I'm kind of glad they had that way. They had that deed too early, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, a small thing.
Sure.
The same kind of thing happened to the jet aircraft. You know, had they come out that a year early, we'd have a different situation over there.
Yeah.
Thing
sure.
We couldn't even see on the scope early. Well, let's see here. Another thing here. Coming down. Yeah, I mentioned to you about Tiger Teague. I don't think I mentioned to you that I did stop me to visit. The Michoud plant, when we took it over, had a short airstrip down there. And Von Braun being the pilot and everything like that, and seeing the necessity of quick transportation, and the fact we wanted to maybe fly the Guppy down and fly things in and out of there, and hardware and that sort of thing, he pushed for to reactivate that airstrip, which studied and put a submitted to Washington, and they didn't go over very good at the committee. And Tiger Teague, his close relationship you all referred to, this is on Brown, he pushed that thing through. I'm sure he had to call a couple of chips in to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Got in the budget. The Tiger Teague came down, a little update on it, and I should have remembered this. I don't know if I was presenting or not then. I might have been. I should have remembered that. But anyway, mentioned that we were whipped on the request for the airstrip in the chute.
What had happened is,
you were withdrawing.
Withdrawing.
Cancel out, Tiger.
All the trouble you went through, that's okay. Just cancel out.
he was putting great pressure up there, and somebody pulled the rug out from under him. They didn't like it very much.
No.
Didn't go very big. And it was bad from the standpoint we hadn't done our homework. Here's a runway, and down here, the canal and everything, down here's a bridge over the canal. Well, bridges and runways don't necessarily mix too well.
Right.
So there's a flight hazard coming in there. Always would have been. It might have even been worse. I don't know what the plans were in the future. I didn't know that. We pushed that thing all the way to the crime, got it approved, and it wasn't safe to fly into.
Mm-hmm.
That's about a bad thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So Tiger didn't like that much, and he was really irate at the time like that.
Did he come down and let his...
No, he was down. No, he was down here when he learned of it. He already got it in, you know, and he's all happy and everything else coming out.
Right.
And has his staff plus his congressional staff. I mean, not his, the other congressman with him, you know, and he's a leader. And he just down here, we pulled the rug out of him and said, Tiger, we don't need this anymore.
Sorry any trouble you went through. What did he say or do?
Well, he just got upset. I don't know what he said, but it was certainly irate.
Why in the world wouldn't somebody discover that earlier?
Let me tell you another one, though. We were building the S-4B test stand at Sacramento with the same mental set that said Tulum Tire. And we're putting it on the Sacramento test facility, which is right adjacent to the SAC base. At that time, they were flying out of that base and all kind of missions to be ready to go. I mean, even the air would bomb everything else all the time doing that.
Sure.
And the commanding general of the SAC base looked out the window one day. His executive officer standing there and said, Bob, said, what are we doing out there? I don't know, Bob. Find out. We learned $1 million, this is several years ago, $1 million site prep contract, but it's stretching down, doing all that kind of stuff, getting ready for the building, doing it in phases, and came back with the bad answer. They had to build a test stand that stands up so high in the flight bed.
Sure.
Not much in the flight bed, just enough. And boy, we were in a sweat. I mean, really, this is the kind of thing that you lose your job over, really. I mean, this is a really serious thing. Because to do that, you have to get approval. The FFA has to be open hearings. They schedule them down the Los Angeles to hear on this thing. But the general at the SAC base had apparently been this, kind of through this thing before. He said, well, if we just talk our flight fast like that, we'll get by with it. And they did. And we lived. I mean, we lived through that. Yeah. But we can't. We spent $1 million. I mean, it would have cost almost as much to cancel that. But it wouldn't be to complete it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get a contract, you can be terminated, you pay through the nose. But that wasn't the bad part. The bad part would be the absolute total embarrassment of building this thing and not checking it.
Sure.
And that was kind of my idea. Tom Brokaw's The Fleecing of America.
That had Jim Shock on there, Fleecing of America. But you had a very cooperative
basic commander there.
You a little bit, we said, Ed Jr. went out to the hearings in Los Angeles, and it came out okay. No, nobody objected, and away we went with that thing. But that was close. Job description. He says, I'm alive and I don't need a birth certificate either.
Okay, was my job description.
I'm kind of guy he was. All right.
And he got away with all that stuff. And he was a very valuable man and kind of a feared man. You don't know what he's going to do next, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I regret him ever leaving here. He went with the colonel that took over the facilities program in Iowa. I told you about the other day that put it under this guy so we'd get further separation from the Corps and other things. And
sure.
He went over with him and just did a fine job. He had a lot of innovative ideas on management that we used. And he's very well done.
Huh.
So I hate to see him go, but I would like him gone a little sooner before he got up to the West Coast and Webb and everybody else upset. We had a construction committee that Webb appointed early in the fall. We're still in the Hick building. It's called the Walsh. I think it's the Walsh committee. They were construction men. Construction men are a different breed, like newspaper men. They're a different breed. You know, they don't think like normal people. But they sent him down, and they came through here. We talked to them, and I told them several things. One of them was, we're going to do the job on time with anyone and stuff. I can't stay out of jail. Now, some people didn't like what I said there, but I was serious about that.
Right.
Then they went from here to the West Coast and started looking around. Those around him went to SNID, North America. And he went in and came to the conclusion, right off the bat, they're overstaffed. Nobody's doing anything. And you got a problem here. It had nothing to do with facilities, but this report was supposed to be sent to Webb sometime looking at the future. They couldn't wait. They went back to Washington, saw Webb's, and said, here's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so that came right down to Von Braun. So Von Braun called and says, straighten that out. So we went out there and we had a big investigation, and Dave New was involved in it considerably, and had an exit interview with the North American people. And set the charges. The charge, we're investigating here, is that we find you essentially being incompetent, you overstaffed and not working and all of that things. That's what this committee found.
Sure.
And we found the same thing.
So I didn't make a lot of friends, but
no. But see, one of the problems, in the early phases of a program, there's nothing else to talk about except what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about the future's design, but people want to talk about things they better understand. We were presenting the Washington Management Council one day, and we still had machinery, we're adding to it and modifying it and driving and piling. And Bob Gilbert said, Jimmy says, what length of piling do you have when you're driving it? And I said, 55 feet. And that was all. I don't know whether it was 55 feet or 550 feet. But, I came back with the answer, and that's okay. I never did find out very well. I didn't want to know how far it
worked. Right.
But you focus in on those things that you think may be a weak spot or it makes you look good or whatever, and you get a reasonable answer back. And it's coming from somebody you have some slight confidence in,
mm-hmm.
You won't go with it. But at which moment you show hesitation, I'll furnish for the record, it's one of those gotchas. From there on out, like Patron carrying the lab directors around and finding that thing going on
sure.
That nobody knew anything about, he had them in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
It was similar to this general coming in seeing Von Braun. The general said, how are things going? Things are going well, except you're on the critical path to the Apollo program.
You're holding us up.
He didn't ask for that. He didn't need that, at the end of the thing like that.
Any more?
I think the Munger notes were the real fine thing, and the one that and the staff lunch. We had a staff lunch, as you know, probably recall or heard about or people tell you about every day, and it got to be a boys. On the other hand, it was a very good and useful tool for management by Von Braun.
Did he? did he attend all these launches?
Yeah, he attended them all, yeah. Because when he wasn't there, sometimes, many times he weren't there. I think it's canceled now.
That was daily.
Yeah, every day. And it would last up to you know, an hour.
Yeah.
And no presentation. People didn't come and make presentations. It was a special occurrence or something like that. It was just talking about things that are going on and what's going on in Washington, what we might be headed, what might be in the future,
mm-hmm.
how we doing. I guess it was a verbalization
of a lot of the Monday notes. They didn't repeat them, but it was that type of information exchange.
A lot of direction given and a lot of reporting done. And on top of that, you try to eat and enjoy yourself. And they were, I thought they were very useful things.
They cut an hour out of your day,
but you're going to eat 30 minutes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they were working hours, and your 30 minutes might be literally in a more pleasant environment. Because you never knew what's going to come up. So.
Sure.
You go back to the Monday notes, somebody might sit there and say, well, Bob, that's screwed up, and write to your face. Well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If he has goods on you, if he did, you might as well face it now and get whatever thing, get this thing fixed out.
Right.
Now, that's not, but it's not a single problem. So see, you have to keep in mind, it sounds like they could take a person on just what he's doing, but what he does affects all about it. And if you get into a personality thing, which people can do, and complain that what you're not combing your hair right, at the same time you're building a test stand, we want to talk about, we want to hear, I don't care how you look, you know.
Right.
Like Bob Bowen told Carl Heinberg one time, said, Carl says, you're not so popular because you're pretty. Well, because you're rich.
He
told Carl.
Sure, right.
I may have told that before, but
no.
But he was very serious about that, and Carl, he didn't have any problem with it. You know?
Right.
Because he didn't think he was a pretty guy anyway. But he was a rough and tumble man, Carl.
Sure.
He was in during the beginning of the war. He was always in Japan.
Oh, I remember that.
He came all through that. I mean, I don't have to get back to Pina Munda.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how Ernst got there. You know, Ernst walked from...
Ernst was on the eastern front.
He walked from Stalingrad.
Yeah.
I don't think I mentioned that the other day. He met the ambassador, Lou Allen was the guy, ambassador that was there at Stalingrad. He went to Stalingrad about the time Ernst got about halfway back, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine him being he's such a mild mannered.
I know.
And quiet.
Yeah.
And
being that much of a survivor.
Yeah, he is, yeah. But he, I think his, I don't think the traits are developed there, but you know about his private life. He hiked, took all kind of things like that. He acted.
Mm-hmm.
I have regard for Ernst, and not having that dynamic personality, maybe not the right word, dynamic. Not having that aggressive personality.
Right.
He may have suffered some in the team because of that. Heinberg and Widener and some of the rest of them, they just didn't pull any punches. You know.
Um,